Hello and welcome to Civic Strategies, a podcast about cities and their leaders produced in cooperation with the Georgia Municipal Association. I'm Otis White. On our show today is Clara Axum. Clara is one of those people who has been everywhere and done everything in Atlanta. A graduate of Duke University and the University of Michigan Law School, she has worked for two mayors and served as a deputy superintendent for the Atlanta Public Schools and headed a nonprofit that managed infrastructure development and neighborhood improvements in advance of Atlanta's 1996 Summer Olympics. In 2001, all of Clara's boundary-crossing experiences came into play when she became head of an initiative that was focused on a single neighborhood in South Atlanta called Mechanicsville. With a $12.5 million foundation grant, she was told to build up this struggling neighborhood by, among other things, working with its neighborhood school, Dunbar Elementary. In the next 5 years, she learned a great deal about neighborhood development, neighborhood schools, and the risks and rewards of connecting the two. Clara now runs a consulting firm called Clarification and Mediation that does strategic planning, facilitation, and communications work. And with that introduction, welcome, Clara Axum.
Thank you.
So what was Mechanicsville like in 2001, and what was Dunbar Elementary like?
Well, Mechanicsville was a physically, economically, and to some extent socially depressed neighborhood nestled between Turner Field and often used as a parking lot in many ways when games were going on at Turner Field, and McDaniel Glen, which was one of our older public housing facilities that was just rife with crime and poverty. But it was also a neighborhood with a great deal of pride. Residents that had spirit and determination, doing all they could with the available resources and all they knew how to do to create what every resident in Atlanta wants, which is a safe, healthy, vibrant neighborhood where they could raise their kids and not worry. The school was an underperforming school, very toxic school environment. It was an inward-focused, bunkered school. Very few windows. Very, very much focused inward. It was also a school with no address because it originally faced a street that had been abandoned in favor of building or expanding a park adjacent to the school. And one of the ironies of our work was that we had the devil of a time just getting an address for the school. Where is it? What is it? How do you find it? It really was not on the map. In some ways, that says it all.
What did you do? You had a neighborhood that had potential but wasn't in a happy place, and you had a school that was looking inward. What did you do to bring the two together?
We tried to organize activities that would cause the school and the residents to come together around what they agreed on, which was the promise and hope for the future, making Mechanicsville a good place to live, to educate, to nurture. So we began the business of creating sessions in which we invited as many people as we could convince to show up to say what actions, and we tried not to make them big actions, just small projects that we could begin to work on together and where we could have some success and just begin to get residents and school personnel just to know each other and to talk to one another.
This eventually became an organization that you helped put together called the Mechanicsville Community Learning Collaborative. It introduced residents and educators, and you worked to explore the assets of the school and the neighborhood, figure out what they had in common, and decide what they wanted to do. And so what did they want to do? What did they want to work on?
They wanted the same things that you and I want. They wanted to see an improved housing stock. They wanted a safe environment. The school, interestingly enough, even though it was what I call a bunker school and very focused inward, when there was trouble in the neighborhood and somebody was in physical trouble, it was not at all unusual to run up on the porch of the school, and if the door was open, to run into the school as a safe haven and a safe place. They wanted a safe green space. There is a pathway between the school and Dunbar Community Center, and it's less than a block walk. But the smaller children could not walk that block, in part because there was bullying along the path. Older children that would harass them, intimidate them. So there was some fear and trepidation There was a house directly across from the school that had been abandoned. Nobody lived there. We discovered that the kids were afraid to walk past that house because that's where the boogeyman was, literally. That's a quote. Getting that house abandoned and just full of junk, knocked down, and getting that lot cleaned off. It was a matter of helping navigate the bureaucracy. If anything, we were simply an instrument.
It sounds a little bit like what you were doing is you were listening to the children, you were listening probably to the teachers and the principal, and you were listening to the neighbors, and you were trying to help them find out you have some problems that can be solved, and our expertise can be showing you how to work through City Hall or perhaps work through the school system to get the things that you need. Is that where you began to make progress?
We began to make ourselves the great connector, if you will, until the connections were made. I think that the real trick is to see yourself as the connector, not to impose, to do exactly what you just described, to listen, and to work to connect, and then be able to step back and not take over.
Let me ask you this. Did the teachers and the principal, or they must have had different priorities than the neighbors did. Did they learn to talk to each other and find common areas of cooperation?
I don't know that they had different priorities so much. I think they all had a priority for moving Dunbar from the bottom of the heap and seeing some progress in terms of its academic success. I will tell you that the residents were distrustful and cautious and skeptical. I will tell you that the school was distrustful and cautious and skeptical. And by the way, my definition of residents is parents and non-parents. It was just as important for us to engage parents as it was for us to help residents that had no children, help them to understand that this is an asset in your community and to put forward the proposition that, do you believe that without making this a quality school, you can continue to grow this as a quality neighborhood? If you believe that the two go hand in hand and that you will never have the quality neighborhood until you have an excellent school environment and center, what is going to be your involvement as a non-parent in the school and the school system? So part of it was helping all of the stakeholders, if you will, see not only the benefit and what's in it for me, but what part can I play? What role can I play in reaching for the goal and helping everybody to understand that we're all on the same path trying to do the same thing?
By the end of your time there, what had changed in the neighborhood and what had changed at the school?
One of the frustrating things about a project like this is there's the tangible and there's the intangible, which is harder to wrap your arms around. We had worked with the Sumac Community Development Corporation, a neighborhood organization that's been in Mechanicsville and done wonderful work long before we ever arrived. But we worked with Sumac CDC to build 10 new single-family houses on infill lots and to assure that some of them were market rate and some of them were affordable. We work with the school system to come in and work with the neighborhood on, I shouldn't say building a new school, but renovating so that there's a practically new school with an entirely different orientation and with plenty of windows and connections. We had a very, very difficult time convincing various institutions that there was a demand there for early learning programming. So we put in a couple of classrooms to focus on three-year-olds and four-year-olds, and on the first day, we were oversubscribed. Eventually, the Casey Foundation, along with the Woodruff Foundation, came in to support the building of a high-quality early learning center. Today, the education center of Mechanicsville, if you will, goes from zero to fifth grade. Those kinds of things, new lines of communication between school and residents, a different kind of engagement for parents. We had a parent that had been in the school, had children in the school, had been in the school as a volunteer, but had not finished her high school education, got her GED, some college courses, became a certified paraprofessional, and is still working there in the Early Learning Center.
And this would not have happened had the connections not been made between the neighborhood and the school as they were during those years.
I am not so bold to say that it would not have happened, but I am so bold to say that I think we were able to be catalytic and to be a moving force. When we started this interview, one of the things that I said to you was that this is a very determined, high spirit, very proud neighborhood that really does have a vision for Mechanicsville. If we did anything, it was to be the instrument and to be able to lift the voices and to help make the connections, be they between the residents or the residents in the school or the residents in the school and City Hall and the school board and Turner Field. We were able to navigate and make those connections just to help those dreams come to reality.
So let me ask you, if there's a city official who's listening or a neighborhood leader who thinks it would be a great idea if he or she could get the school system involved in improving neighborhoods, what's the most important thing they should know about making that relationship work?
A couple of things. First of all, it takes time, it takes patience, and yet you have to push. You really have to push. I coined a term. I used to say we have to be urgently patient. It's not transactional.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, they're transactions. There are things that happen that are a one-time kind of a transaction. But if you don't, in fact, build the foundation and the capacity so that the next time there's a need for that transaction, there's some capacity and some institutional sensitivity for the need for the transaction, then you really haven't left anything behind.
A little social capital, maybe?
A little social capital. It's important not to impose, but to recognize that there are people that live there. They are probably the greatest asset, and you have to be willing to listen and be willing to become that instrument and to buy into the dream.
Now, if we turn this around and we ask the question from the school system's point of view, let's say you had a superintendent who thought, you know, it would be good for the schools if we could get the residents more involved and city officials more involved in working with us. Would your advice be any different?
It wouldn't. I'd add to it for school officials. I'd say that the schools have to learn to reach out and they have to learn to pull in. They have to learn to go out into the community and not just to put a flyer on the door, but to really know the neighborhood and what the neighborhood is about and what the neighborhood is attempting to accomplish, and to really become an integral part of the social fabric of the neighborhood. The school system has to really practice a different kind of transparency. It has to be willing to say, yes, here are all the good things that we've been able to do, and here are the success measures, and at the same time to say, we're not doing so well with this, 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 and this, but we're working on it. And to invite residents in to work on it with them. The school system has to help local leadership, meaning the school building leadership, to develop a skill set that helps them to educate, be open to feedback, and to engage the community in its intervention strategy. Educate the community around what that intervention strategy is, you know, why you've chosen it, what your expectations are, how you track it. Be open to the feedback, to hear what your parents and your residents are saying, and then get them engaged in that intervention strategy in some way. In the end, it's all about communicating, it's all about collaborating, and it's all about connecting.
Well, thank you, Clara. My guest has been Clara Axum, talking about creating alliances between public schools and the neighborhoods they serve. This has been Civic Strategies. I'm Otis White. Thanks for listening.